I will say, I'm reading the acknowledgements. There is no crime ring consultant listed in the acknowledgements. So if he had one, they requested him to remain anonymous.
If it is, you know, let's be real here. If he did learn anything, it would not have been from a former crime ring person who was involved. It'd be from like maybe. but it'd be from like, I don't know. Who does that, like the FBI or something like that, some and they would very much absolutely not be in the credits of your accreditations of your book. So who knows, maybe he did that. You know, that'd be a good question to ask if I ever get to do a Q&A question with Brandon of like, did you not did you like get specific consultation like advice, but like what was some of the inspiration? Were there like, did you do research on actual like crime rings or things like that? I think that'd be fascinating. I wonder if he has.
This might be an even more relevant question as we go forward, because what's he writing next? The Ghost Bloods era of Mistborn. So maybe he's going to do the interview the mafia family members to get content for his books.
Yeah. Maybe he need to interview and he has personal experience.
Maybe so.
I wasn't going to throw that out.
Maybe he's awfully good at writing about these characters. I mean, you know, he's got to know something.
Welcome back to Following No One on a Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 235, and we are in Wind and Truth, chapters 23 through 26. Elliot, how are you?
I am doing swell. Enjoying me some Stormlight reading. We talked about this before we started the book. It had been a long time since we'd read a Stormlight book, like 2 years. And so I'm savoring every moment of this, because it's been a while and it's going to be an even longer while after we finish this book. So I'm enjoying every chapter like a slow sip of tea.
Paul, how are you?
Man, oh man, I'm great. I'm swell. I'm ready to talk about some Stormlight.
We have our first Zeth flashback chapter, Paul. You were requesting last episode for one, and here it is.
I'm so excited. If you listened to our last episode, you heard me joke about romancing the stone, and here we are. Zeth is romancing the stone, to reference the 80s movie.
Do you have two words, Paul, for anything in these chapters?
I do. My two words are unrelated, and it is, one is stone, and the other is misunderstanding.
4K.
I think that we have a bit of a misunderstanding with our unmade. We talked about unmade a bit last episode. And I say misunderstanding very intentionally, because I think we simply don't understand yet. But we've had lots of hints throughout, not just this chapter or these chapters or this book, but all of the Stormlight Archive, that there may be more to know about this. I'm referencing Jean Anat. We will see. We'll talk more about that, but I think there may be a misunderstanding there. I would like to briefly say, I'm not an unmade apologist saying that they are good. There's a lot of arguments out there that they're amoral and not bad. I just think there's a misunderstanding. I think there's a lot that we don't know about their motives that might not be all bad.
I'm of the camp that I think they were once not bad, but they are now clearly so. With an asterisk there for Jean Anat. Jean Anat is our special case. She shows up in these chapters. Elliot, do you have two words?
I do, and my two words are licking dirt.
Good words, good words.
That's incredible. Those are my favorite two words.
Shout out to the sheep.
Molly is the name of the sheep who is licking dirt. I have no deep thoughts about licking dirt. It just made me chuckle a lot. So They're my words.
Besides licking dirt, what else happens in these chapters 23 through 26?
Oh, yeah, I should probably summarize these up. All right, so if it's been a while since you've read these chapters, I'll hit the main events for you here. So 23 through 26. 23, we get a little bit of time with Shallan and her crew as they're trying to infiltrate the Ghostblood meetings. She does this pretty cool thing where she uses her armor to form the armor around the Ghostblood assassin girl and like capture her and completely immobilize her so that they can take her clothes and her mask and Shallan can take her place. That's all that happens there in 23, but we're going to get more with that in a second. Second half of 23 is with Navani, and she's doing like Fabriel stuff, although she actually spends a fair amount of time talking to like Sabariel and Polona. They're back, I guess, about like administrative details of logistics and trade and all that kind of stuff. And then talks with Rushu, her ardent, about some of the Spren and Fabriel methods that they're trying out. And that, I think, does it for 23. So 24 is our very first Zeth flashback chapter, which is fascinating. I'm not honestly going to say too much about it because I think we're going to analyze it probably here as we get into things. But we get to see 11-year-old Zeth as he is exploring the world as a young member of the Shin culture. Chapter 25 goes back to Shallan with the Ghostbloods, and she is like in the door. She's full in person and in disguise. She couldn't use her light weavings because they had some of that fancy sand that lets you know when investiture is being used nearby. So she had to go old school and actually capture and put the, you know, bag over the head of the person and steal their armor and take their place. She does all that, gets inside. Runs into Shanat in the Ghostblood meeting, learns a lot of good information, and is just kind of sitting in the background soaking up some information. And then end of 25 goes back to Dalinar and Navani, who are really just kind of talking about, like, what are the implications of maybe Dalinar taking up the Shard of Honor? And what would that do to us? What would that do to life? How would that even look? They're chatting about it. 26, to wrap up this episode, goes back to Shallan, and we kind of close, or we finish that little scene there with her in the Ghostblood's lair where she learns even more information but does eventually get caught, and that's the cliffhanger we end on, is they've just discovered that it's Shallan right in the midst of them, and how in the world is she going to get out? We will find out next week on Wind and Truth.
Thank you. I also got that cliffhanger in the preview chapters, so I decided to intentionally leave you on it.
Thank you.
So you are welcome. Okay. Let's cover Shallan all in one block. Paul, can you wait to do Zeth after we do Shallan, or do you want to do Zeth before? I will leave it up to you.
Do you mean that?
I do. It is your decision. Hey, okay. After next week, I'm going blind. I have only read through chapter 29. After next week, I'm just like you. I'm a plebeian. No. Yeah.
So that's what you think of us?
Yes.
Just a little simpletons, Elliot and I. No. I appreciate it, Trevor. And as you have patted my back to let me talk about Zeth first in previous episodes, I'm gonna go ahead and pass that opportunity up. We'll talk about Zeth later.
All right. That sends it to Shallan. Shallan, over four chapters, so three chapters with a Zeth flashback, so that doesn't count, infiltrates a Ghostblood meeting and finds out some interesting information. And yes, the cliffhanger, she gets discovered right at the end. What'll happen? Who knows? But what did we learn, gentlemen? Anything exciting in this Ghostblood meeting? We'll talk about Jeannette later, but specifically about the Ghostbloods.
So, I mean, doesn't Shallan have a moment where she's thinking about Marais here, right? Marais, and there's another funny named character next to Marais, right?
There's Yato. Are we talking about Yato?
Yeah. I think that's a funny name. Marais and Yato. I wanted to bring this up because Shallan mentions, so she kind of brings up the vision of the Ghostbloods that she's understood is getting investiture off of Roshar, and she doesn't doubt that there's a lot of money in that to be made, but she does doubt that that's actually what Rey's Inyatil are after. I'm just going to kind of open the floor there. Do we know more? Do y'all have more thoughts on that? What are Marais and Yatil after? We know they're in cahoots with Thaidakar, who is up to all sorts of things. But Marais and Yatil, what are they really doing?
I think for me, those are some of my biggest questions coming out of this series of chapters is what are the various different motives that are all going on here? Because we've already kind of suspected, and I feel like this chapter says it outright, that this group of Ghostbloods, which are led by Yatil, remember, Marais is like the not dummy leader. He very much is like the second in command, but Yatil kind of puts him out front, but she's actually leading this crew of Ghostbloods. They say here in this chapter, I think it's like chapter 26 where they really get into this, that her motives are not the same as Thaidakar's.
Correct.
They're similar. They talk about it. Thaidakar's is to protect his home world. Yatil is, and some other things that definitely have a lot to do with Ba'edo Mishram.
Correct.
And then it gets even more confusing because at the very end here, Yatil turns to Shallan, who she thinks is her friend. Trevor and I were trying to like look up the name here because I think it's only like buried in one of the comments. It's like Aileen or something like that. Aileen.
Yeah, it's Aileen, I think.
And says a couple interesting things. The first one is, I still believe in Marais, but I'm not sure we can trust him. It's like, okay.
I feel like overnight the Ghostbloods have become way less of like a single unit.
Yes.
I've always thought of the Ghostbloods as like unanimous, follow Thaidakar. There are way more individuals in the Ghostbloods than I originally thought.
And this comment is really interesting too. Like it's even more like intriguing than I paraphrased. Here's the actual what she says. Something is wrong with him. She's talking about Marais because Marais just walked out of the room. Something is wrong with him, Yatil said softly. I do not think he has been replaced with a duplicate, but I do question his loyalty to our cause. What?
Very nice.
What? You know, I just had a thought as I just literally read that now. I was going to go a different direction with that, and now I'm going to pivot. Replaced with a duplicate. That kind of confused me. I was like, what? That's odd. Like, specifically odd because she's talking to someone who's been replaced with a duplicate in Shallan who's doing that. I think that's where I got distracted at first. But now that I read that again and put myself in the kind of persona, in the POV of someone from Scadrial, that sounds rather Chandra-ish.
Oh, like, yeah.
Actually, what I thought of when you read that they don't fear they're a duplicate or something like that. It's absolutely got Chandra written all over it.
Yeah. So maybe what she's saying there is, I don't think a Chandra is impersonating him, but I don't trust him anymore? Like,
Or I don't think Marais, who is a Chandra, has been swapped out with another Chandra.
Right.
But it might be.
Right? Interesting. Huh. Wow, okay. I'm thinking that just struck me as I was reading that out loud for you guys. Okay, anyway. Yatil has motives that are not quite the same as Thaidakar's. Marais is apparently no longer necessarily completely trusted by Yatil. And then it gets even more. Okay, so, and there's only like two paragraphs for the end of the chapter here. And then Yatil turns to Shallan, who's the other one, and says, these are my motives, but what about yours? And
that gets her discovered?
Yes, and because Shallan doesn't really have an answer for that, then she's suspicious, and then that's how she gets discovered. But like, what? Well, here's the line too. Again, it's even more suspicious than what I said. He works to protect his home. Oh, he's talking about Thardaukar. Yatil's talking about Thardaukar. He works to protect his homeland above all else. But once we find Mishram for my purposes, he will see. Master Thardaukar can only protect his land if the shards can be controlled. Will this fit your plans as well? Who is Shallan impersonating that Yatil would go, those are my plans. What about your plans? Like, that's almost like the question of an equal.
Right.
It's a, hey, we've brought in another Ghostblood sect leader to join us in this cause who has other motives in addition to ours. Do these align with your plans, well, dear cohort?
And those, yeah, and those motives are comparable to capturing Ba'ed O'Mishram to control the shards.
Yeah.
Huh?
The Ghostbloods have really been confusing me lately. Like, exactly what you're just saying, like, capturing Ba'ed O'Mishram or capturing the shards, all the, like, this crazy scale things. Whenever we were introduced and it was like, ooh, we're going to get investiture to other planets. And we're like, other planets? What? You know?
Yeah.
But here we are. And so in my head, the Ghostbloods in any other story would be like a normal organization. Like, I feel like you would see there's lots of stories where there's a seemingly good business or company. This happens in the real world too. There's a good business or company that's a front for some illegal activity that like the elite within that organization know about, but the actual workers do not, you know, that they are unaware. This feels like what we have here, but they're not under the facade of like a legal business. They are already an illegal operation that yeah. Then within itself, the uppers have like a ulterior motive, which is way more massive and potentially diabolical, which I didn't realize that until now, how like preposterous that kind of is.
But I mean, it
kind of is. It's kind of wild.
Who founded it besides Kelsier? There's always another secret, the Lord of Scars. So there's if someone were to make an intercosmere pyramid scheme of recruiting your buddy just to widen the circle so it doesn't get back to you, it'd be Kelsier.
You make a great point, actually. It's literally Kelsier has run the biggest pyramid scheme, and it's like you can't even keep track of who's where, who wants what, who is doing what. They have Kalak. Felt is a part of this. Like, I don't know. Like,
well, yeah. And let's get back to who's loyal to who. Felt has Kalak, but Felt specifically described Yatil as a witch and doesn't follow her. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, there's like weird dynamics in the scene going on where Mraes is like, ah, good work, Felt, get back to us and we'll pay you well. And Felt's like, yeah, screw that. I don't want your money. You know, they're not on the same page completely.
Yeah.
Not to mention somehow our characters we've met from other stories, like in Mistborn Era 2, like Twin Soul and people like that being involved. That's not happening right now in this book, but like, the Ghostbloods, man, like, because we've seen a glimpse into the future of the Ghostbloods as an organization.
Yep.
And it does not seem like this. In my opinion, it does not seem like this.
This, yes, I was going to say that. The small Ghostblood inner cell on Scadrial seems way more chill than these guys on Roshar.
Truly have no idea. Do we or does Brandon know anything about like legitimate like crime rings? Because I'm wondering how like akin this may be of this, because like I said a minute ago, like
he interviews professionals on getting
he does. I mean, you could talk with someone who's I mean, I'm, you know, there's organizations that I'm sure are and groups that are organized towards targeting down, you know, crime rings in real life, right? I'm sure in those organizations, it's like, you know, you have people who do things, who do all sorts of organized crime that are not the mastermind people, that are just trying to make some money or things like that, right? I'm gonna guess that Brandon did not do in-depth crime ring research into the infrastructure of them and how they operate. But I'm like, man, this is pretty complex, and there's a lot of moving parts within the Ghostbloods. It is interesting because, honestly, and even still, I'm not going to go so far as to say, like, this is one of the things I'm most looking for, even though each week I feel like I add something to that list. Like, I'm most excited to see what happens next with X storyline. The Ghostbloods aren't like among my top things, but it is getting very interesting because we now know a lot of the players involved, and all the players, yeah, like you were saying, Trevor, seem to be doing different things entirely. So I really don't know. It's just pure chaos amidst the chaos that we have going on in the world versus Todium right now. It just seems like quite a lot.
I will say, I'm reading the acknowledgments. There is no crime ring consultant listed in the acknowledgments. So if he had one, they requested him to remain anonymous.
If it is, you know, let's be real here. If he did learn anything, it would not have been from a former crime ring person who was involved. It'd be from like maybe. but it'd be from like, I don't know, who does that, like the FBI or something like that. Some, and they would very much absolutely not be in the credits of your accreditations of your book. So who knows? Maybe he did. That, you know, that'd be a good question to ask if I ever get to do a Q&A question with Brandon of like, did you not did you like get specific consultation, like advice, but like, what was some of the inspiration? Were there like, did you do research on actual like crime rings or things like that? I think that'd be fascinating. I wonder if he has.
This might be an even more relevant question as we go forward, because what's he writing next? The Ghostbloods era of Mistborn. So maybe he's going to do the interview the mafia family members to get content for his books.
Yeah,
maybe he doesn't need to interview, and he has personal experience.
Maybe so.
I wasn't going to throw that out.
Maybe he's awfully good at writing about these characters. I mean, you know, he's got to know something. That's hilarious. Sanderson family mafia.
All righty.
Couple other things we learn in these chapters here. We learn that, well, there's the whole Sha-Not bit. I'm trying to see if there's anything else before we go onto that. I think Shallan learned some things that we already knew, which was Felt and the other Spren, things like that. And then, one other bit. Shallan notices, so the whole time they're in there, Moraes is messing around with this like crossbow thing. He's got this fancy crossbow and he keeps shooting this target on the other side of the room. Later on, Shallan notices that in his little quiver, he has crossbow bolts tipped with gemstones that are infused with anti-stormlight. Did you guys catch this?
Yes, but that's just because I've read a little further than you have.
Uh-oh. Hey. And Shallan immediately worries about what, of course, we are, of what exactly is going to happen when you shoot down a Radiant with an anti-stormlight infused crossbow bolt. That's not going to go well for the hero.
What I'm want, so we've already seen anti-stormlight affect Fenderana, rest in peace.
Yes.
What I am curious about is how it affects low Spren as opposed to high Spren, like your armor. Would it kill your armor or would it not? Is that like stormlight or is that just normal? I don't know. You know,
that's a really good question. Because that's the level that a lot of our Radiants are getting to now, is fourth ideal where they can start busting out that armor and they're going to start thinking they're pretty invincible in that stuff.
Right.
And if Ghost Bloods or whoever else starts whipping out some crossbow bolts that can take that down, that's going to be a problem. Also, flashback for me to my very long time ago RuneScape days where you could gather up lots of different kinds of crossbow bolts and infuse them with lots of different powers and do fancy things. And like certain bosses required you to have like certain crossbow bolt infused stuff in order to have a chance of defeating them. I had some good flashbacks there as I saw Murray's walking around with gemstone tipped crossbow bolts.
That is really cool. They mention like where these crossbows are from and like the notable strength of them, right? I think that was just like a neat detail to showcase. We still periodically get glimpses into like the details and in areas of Roshar, and that's just something that I kind of find fascinating. That's just a really minute detail.
Yeah, they specifically call it a hand ballista from...
That's right.
Somewhere. I don't remember where it is.
Yeah. To add to Elliot's like video game reference, if y'all ever played a Civilization, depending on what like nation you choose, they have special units. Like there's like the... What? Like the... Depending on historical like war tactics and resources that countries have, you know, they have specified or special... you know, equipment. And so that's what it felt reminiscent of to me. And I thought that was just a neat minor detail, but neat.
Should we talk about Jean Not? That was a pretty big reveal in this chapter, these series of chapters.
Yeah, Jean Not shows up to this Ghost Blood meeting. What's going on there?
I was pretty surprised by that just to right off the bat, because that's like the first thing that Shallan sees when she walks in. She's like walking in and she sees a bit of glass or something and goes, whoa, there's Jean Not chilling out there. And then she throws Jean Not completely under the bus later as a distraction tactic to not get caught. Shallan is like in conversation with Yatil and the other Malwish person, and they're talking in the language that Shallan doesn't understand. And so she's like, Jean Not. And is able to turn their attention there. And then Jean Not even speaks to her later and is like, hey, thanks for calling me out there. That wasn't so cool.
I'm actually curious if moving for, I mean, there's larger questions at the end of this episode of what's about to happen to Shallan in the next 2 seconds. However, I'm now wondering, once all that is done, if the Ghost Bloods then throw Jean Not under the bus because they're like, she must have been in league with Shallan because Shallan knew she was there type. So I wonder if the Ghost Bloods just lost their faith in Jean Not.
That's a good question. I didn't think about that. That could definitely be where this goes, because the big reveal for us and for Shallan is that not only is Jean Not there, Jean Not has been helping the Ghost Bloods.
And giving them Spren.
Yeah. Giving them Spren to bond and giving them direct information about Dalinar and his plans and the whole going into the spiritual realm to go after Mishra. That Jean Not knows all of that, seemingly pretty much everything we've talked about in the previous chapters, and is feeding that straight to the Ghost Bloods. And yet Jean Not does not reveal Shallan standing there in the room.
Yep.
So whose side is she on?
Shallan asks that question. Shallan asks, whose side are you on, Jean Not? And Jean Not says this. It's longer than that, but she says, I fight for my survival. I am on the side of preserving this world for my children. If there is no room for my children, there will be no room for yours. Which I would like to contend the theory that Shallan is pregnant and Jean Not knows, just for my bingo board. Thank you.
Since y'all let me put an asterisk on Sel is mentioned last week, we'll put an asterisk on your thing there, Trevor.
I think that's confirmed that Shallan's pregnant with twins. Just saying that if I want to preserve this world for my children, and whoa, whoa, you need to preserve it for yours.
Whoa. As a metaphor.
Yeah, Trevor's getting a little carried away.
You're there. Talking to a spread. No. I don't know if it's a metaphor.
No. No. Paul gets an asterisk. You do not.
Do I get a tilde?
No. I'm sorry. I tried, Trevor, but...
You get faint hopes that you can grasp onto.
You get the hope. Similar to, like, I've had the hope that, they mentioned a new storm is coming. So I've been waiting on this third storm for my bingo board since, like, chapter one. So you just get that. You get a little nod. Maybe it'll come true one day.
Darn it.
You're a good boy.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work out.
Gonna have to wait till Stormlight 6 for my bingo board to be done. Yeah, I just want to throw that out there. Okay, actual John, not conversations. She's on her own side because nobody's on her side. We've brought that up multiple times talking about Spren. We've talked about that on the Oathgate Spren. We've talked about that on John Knot. We kind of teased this. The Unmade, I think, are fairly certainly in the bad guy camp, in Odium's camp. Except for Jean Anat. Jean Anat seems to be awake enough, for lack of a better term, free will enough to realize what has happened to her and act against it. Specifically, help Shallan, help the Ghostbloods maybe, if that's going to counteract Odium. Jean Anat is... Help Renarin, there's another one. She's working for herself to preserve Roshar is her declared motive there. So any thoughts on that?
I've changed my thinking on Jean a little bit after this chapter, and that previously I was pretty ready to trust Jean in the sense of I was thinking Jean was going to be much more standoffish. It was going to be, I'm here for my health myself, so I'm not going to help anybody. But here we have Jean-Not like directly pairing up with the Ghostbloods, giving them Spren, feeding them information directly, giving them information about the spiritual realm so they can make these plans of what they're going to do. Jean-Not is much more involved than I thought she was going to be. And therefore, I think I need to retract my thinking there and say, Jean-Not's very much in like the maybe she's not evil, but now I don't think we can trust her. Because she's clearly just shown that she's going to go hand the information you give her to anybody else.
She's now in the same box as Cultivation. No longer on the sidelines, seems to be making decisions.
Sure.
You don't put Cultivation in that box?
I think Cultivation... I'm viewing Jana as more active than Cultivation. Cultivation is starting to do some things, but I think Cultivation is still like her goal is don't intervene. Help, guide, try and achieve what I need to achieve, but don't intervene. Jana is full on intervene. Shauna is, I'm going to go listen in on your conversation and your Ethereum and then go feed it to these guys over here because a little chaos is going to help me. That's the vibe I'm getting off of Jana now.
Yeah, fair enough. Do we learn anything else in this Ghostblood meeting?
The only other big notes I have are like what's immediately coming next, which is Iyatil and Moraes are going to try and piggyback Dalinar into the spiritual realm. They're going to try
buy and... Mishram.
Yes, yeah. They're going to try and position themselves such that they can get sucked into the spiritual realm when Dalinar does his perpendicularity thing. Then when they're there, capture Ba'edel Mishram, which I don't think that's what Dalinar is going there for. So it's not like it's a race to Ba'edel Mishram.
That is what Shallan's going there for, though.
Right. So I guess TBD on whether Shallan's going to be part of that excursion or not.
Right. So now we have two quests to the spiritual realm and one counter quest also into the spiritual realm.
Yes. On top of our Shinovar quests and our other general, hey, defend these cities objectives.
And the contest.
And the contest.
It is so much that I'm wondering how this can all get done. I think it will all tie up nicely because this is where I think we are going to appreciate the day structure of the book. I think some of these things are going to be alleviated earlier and we're going to be like, okay, great, awesome. On to the bigger thing the next day. I think we're going to have a bit of that, but it does, our plate is certainly filling up pretty big time.
I'm curious how the listener of the full, who has read the full book is listening to our conversation, because I'm sure we're talking about things that almost seem irrelevant by day six, let alone day 10. So I am curious how fast these play out. Like Shinovar, for example, how fast Shinovar pans out and then we're back or if we're not or whatever. One real quick Dalinar thing, and then we'll head to our Zeth flashback. Dalinar and Navani, actually, we'll talk about Navani first. Navani has a Fabriel chapter. Elliot, speaking of bingo boards, I think this one's legit. I think you can check off there's an entire chapter dedicated to Fabriels and Fabriel mechanics. That's on your bingo board, I think.
It is on my bingo board. I'll take it if you're going to give it to me, but I wasn't even considering checking this off because we spend maybe half the chapter talking about Fabriels and how they work. There's other things that happen in this chapter. There's a whole Shallan perspective in this same chapter. And my bingo board says an entire chapter is dedicated to Fabriels. Where is it? I just sat down. Fabriels or light mechanics.
Yeah. It does say an entire chapter. So,
yeah. Which I would say, given the format of what we've seen this book do so far, I think the odds of me checking that off are far lower than I thought they were going into this, because we were coming out of Rhythm of War where we had many whole chapters dedicated to just the kind of thing. So I was thinking, oh, just one chapter dedicated to Fabriels. Definitely. Almost every chapter we're getting is multiple perspectives.
Right.
So the odds of me getting like a just Navani for an entire chapter doing Fabriels now feels a lot smaller.
We'd have to get a Zeth flashback chapter on light mechanics.
Yeah, maybe.
Which could feasibly happen. The dialogue between the sibling and Navani, I want to highlight real quick because they are still not 100% on the same page. I don't know why, but up until this book, I thought that like you and your Spren were pretty much on the same page like 95% of the time. That doesn't seem to be the case for Bondsmiths. Bondsmiths seem to have way more of a negotiation happening than anybody else. But Navani and the sibling go back and forth about taming wild Spren and getting domesticating is the term that they use, like a hog or a chul for those who live on Roshar. And I just think I thought that was a bridge we had already crossed in Rhythm of War, and we're recrossing it. That's fine. I don't think it'll be super relevant for this book. I do think it'll be, hey, the sibling is fine with Fabriels moving forward into the back five. We're going to do cool things with Fabriels. Don't worry about the morality of it anymore, because they'll solve it.
We talked a couple of episodes, right, about we could see Eurythiru becoming this like center of science and this heart of Roshar as it moves into a more scientific age, more sci-fi maybe. So yeah, you could be absolutely right. Maybe these little bits of chapters are kind of us just moving in that direction of the sibling maybe getting a little more on board with you can harness the power of a lesser Spren without torturing it. And you can domesticate it. You can give it treats. They even talk about like they give the Spren treats in the form of compliments. They like coax. You're such a good
little fire Spren.
Yeah, they like coax the Spren out of the like housing chamber into the Fabrial. They do their work shift of a few hours in the Fabrial, and then they let them out and they give them compliments about how good they did. And then the Spren like feeds on that and grows and gets all happy. And then they shuffle it back to like the housing center. You know, I can see that working. I can see that becoming an economy or a science of sorts. Spren husbandry.
One more quick section. Dalinar and Navani have a little bit of heart-to-heart. Navani makes the plea to Dalinar, if you do this, will I lose you? This is a very personal issue. That we're no longer talking about cities and shards and stuff. This is Navani to Dalinar. They're married. Hey, am I going to lose you if you do this? Very tender moment. The conclusion they come to is, well, yeah. If we do this, we may lose our marriage. I probably won't be human anymore. And so Navani's solution to it is, okay, I can accept that. Let me go with you. Let me go with you to go at least peek into the spiritual realm, see what we're talking about, and we can be together and make the decision when the time comes, when we're in there. And Dalinar says, yep, okay, sounds good. But very personal for those two. What I came to the conclusion of is, okay, that contract between Kaladin and Dalinar, where if Dalinar and Navani disappear, Kaladin inherits the tower, seems rather relevant now, because this spiritual realm endeavor, the odds of it working just went way down for me, because not anything personal against Navani, but conspicuously putting Dalinar and Navani in together into the spiritual realm. It seems like Kaladin might be a little bit more relevant to that contract than we thought. That's where my brain went.
That's a good point, because at least I kind of wrote off that one chapter where Dalinar was writing Kaladin into his will, because it was very clear like Navani was ahead of him in that, and we're like, oh, Navani's tied to the tower, she's not going anywhere, it'll be fine. Now she's going somewhere.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was gonna say that this is an interesting thing, because this I anticipate is the loophole of, I don't know, we haven't seen anyone hop into the spiritual realm. I'm like, does your physical body in my head, I'm like, this doesn't count as her leaving the tower, does it?
Correct. So to help your definition, I think seeing a vision is that.
Okay.
I think you hanging out in a chair, having a spasm attack, speaking the dawn chant, is jumping into the spiritual realm and seeing what the Stormfather wants you to see. I think we've done this already, and we're just now redefining it.
Okay. Then that works great. That makes perfect sense in my head. That was my, my question on this. I'm like, absolutely, Navani could go with. I was assuming that that would somehow not mean she's leaving the tower, so she could still be connected to the sibling, which I anticipate will be helpful in some way, shape, or form. I'm like, it'd be nice to have more help. I don't know what that would look like or what the connection with your Spren looks like in the spiritual realm. That's something I'm very excited to see, by the way. I don't know if it'll be like a big deal, like going into the cognitive realm is, you like see your Spren life size or whatever. It's all different. But yeah, I think it's one other thing I want to say. I think this was really neat for Sanderson to have Navani go along with Dalinar. I think that's a true testament to their relationship and Navani's character of being like, no, you're not just going to sideline me and go do this, like, the most dangerous thing you've probably ever done alone. You know, I am going to go with you. And I also thought it was funny that Dalinar was like, well, my alternative is saying I'm going to take another. What was it? He in his head, he says he might take like one of the the other like scribes with him or something like that.
Yeah,
it was another female character.
He wanted to take someone less relevant to the plot, and yes. Navani's like, no.
Yeah, and I think it was, yeah, pretty much. But I think it was specifically someone who could read or something like that, or, you know, someone who was notably going to be a female. And he was like, that will ensue a great wrath from Navani that, you know, I would much rather just go, you know, take her to the spiritual realm. That's the nicer thing, to not deal with her, you know, her wrath, which I thought was funny. As well as, I haven't actually talked to Alex about this. She's finished the book, so I haven't. We've kept our conversations to a bare minimum. Like, I basically tell her things, and she goes, that sounds cool. You know, she won't say anything, thankfully. But I know, I imagine that's something that she's very proud of. If y'all or any of our listeners remember, Alex was on with our Tress episodes, and one of her favorite things was about Tress. The reason why it's her favorite, one of the reasons is the girl, Tress, being like, I'm not just going to sit around. My man was taken away. I'm going to go after him, you know, type of situation. And I feel like that's a similar thing that we're seeing now with Navani. And I think that's pretty neat. Like I said, I haven't talked to Alex about this, but I anticipate that's something she's a big fan of.
Going back to your spiritual realm comment, I think we've seen the spiritual realm before more than we know we have. Going into the beginning of this book, and you hear, oh, we're going to the spiritual realm, like, that was a big deal to me. But the more that I think about it, connecting Kaladin to Tien at the end of Rhythm of War, talking to the Stormfather in the High Storm, you know, Kaladin describes it as like the place between moments, where there's, you go have a full conversation with the Stormfather and then no time has passed in the physical realm. I think that's what we're talking about, and we're just getting a better definition for it.
That's a good point, actually. And my mind is going back to, like, is it Dalinar and Venli who like meet up, and then Odium notices them, and like the whole world around them just melts into this anger and lava and ridiculousness. That could be spiritual realm.
Right. So I think we're more familiar with it than we think. And we're going to show up, I don't know, tomorrow or day three or day six or whenever we go. And it'll be more familiar than we're giving it credit for. All right, Paul. Zeth flashback. He is dancing for rocks.
He is dancing for rocks. Do y'all remember when we went to Dragonsteel in 2022?
Mm-hmm.
This was the chapter that we got to hear that Brandon read. You know, it wasn't the final version, right? And I don't know. It's been a long time. I don't know if I could tell you exactly what details were kept and excluded when he read it or what. But I remember it being largely the same. I think this is a really, really cool flashback. I'm so excited to talk about it. First, I'm going to start very base level. Like, just looking at this chapter isolated, not getting too crazy about any kind of theories or anything. First, we see Zeth with his sister and their family home area. And it's really nice. You know, we don't see a Zeth that's tormented by things he's done or things like that. We do see a Zeth that is still very focused and diligent, and this, if I mess up, I need to practice more mentality, like very harsh on himself. That is just true to Zeth, how he is. He's hard on himself and a perfectionist, you know? But we also see just, I think, a really nice grace that he has. You know, there's this whole scene where he's dancing for the rocks and all these things. And his beautiful imagery. Brandon is really good at these scenes. It's, I this is a similar scene to like the kata and things like that that you see earlier in Stormlight. This graceful movement. It talks about Zeth being very talented and in kind of a natural above his peers and the other people of Shinovar at this, right? Which also we're getting a lot of hints to kind of back up what we know about Zeth as being like an incredibly graceful and skilled warrior. We see a lot of that here of like, you know, it's not just because he picked up an honor blade. Like he naturally just has a lot of grace and focus, things like that, which I thought was really neat. So it goes on a bit. I believe he has a little squabble with his sister, nothing like major that. And then, but it does become a bigger squabble later because doesn't she pick up a rock?
Not yet. So
not yet.
I can, you haven't read that yet, but Brandon has read that for you because I'll go ahead and say, at Dragon Steel 2022, Brandon read like three chapters of Zeth flashback, and this one only includes we see a rock, and that's the end of the chapter. So
that's right.
There's more to come that you've read. The major inclusion in this published chapter that I wanted to highlight is what his sister is wearing and how it's described. So she is wearing a white dress, and her color splash is an orange apron on her dress. And those who add, people who add, are allowed to wear color splashes, which I wanted to highlight that as a Zeth, or as a Shinovar culture thing, which explains why he wears white. And why he continues to wear white in the modern day. Zeth wears white when he's going to kill a king because he's going to go subtract, right? He's not allowed to wear color. Zeth continues to wear white because he does not feel he adds anything to the world.
I did not pick that up. And man, that hurts a little bit.
Yeah,
I was thinking he just wore white because it was really cool. Like, you know, that's just like epic. But I have to say, that's a really neat thing. I think I mentioned, previously when we were talking about the Ghost Bloods, some little ways that we learn about the cultures on Roshar. I think those nods are really cool. Personally, I'm not like a let's deep dive and learn everything about every culture on Roshar, but things like that are really, Elliot gave me a funny face on that. To be fair, on Roshar, I would. In a lot of books, maybe not as much. However, it's really neat, especially when it adds that significance that Zeth is not an adder, but a subtractor and does not provide anything to society or contribute anything. Really hits, you know. Do you think we'll see him with a pop of color at the end of the book? Is that where we're headed?
I could definitely see it where he makes a decision to, I don't know, kill Teravangian, or makes a decision to go do something significant at the end of this book. He then decides that is adding and wears a color to go do so. I could definitely see.
I think this is a ways back. Interlude maybe somewhere. There's an interlude where I think it's Risen, right? Goes to Shinovar and that does like some trading with the Shin.
Yeah.
I'm imagining she this.
Picks up a grass lump.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to take care of it. Yes.
Yeah. I want to say it's there. Maybe it's somewhere else. We learned a little bit about the Shinovar culture where like farmers are like their highest calling, like the aristocrats of the Shin world are farmers, and the lowest are the warriors. And I've been picking up on this. Hopefully I've put all this together correctly, that it seems like the act of killing is like this line that they cross. And that's where you go from someone who adds to someone who subtracts, is when you kill others. So interesting that you mentioned like, killing Taravangian and things like that, I do wonder if like Zeth will have to do something non-violent that adds to the world somehow or helps everyone to then get back to someone who adds and then earn his color splash.
Well, I'm curious to know if he's about to go kill someone and then Kaladin justifies that to him that he is adding in order, like he's about to go fight this unmade.
Right.
And that is adding to the world because you're restoring Shinovar, you know, that type of thing. And the Shin wouldn't agree with that.
Trevor, there's something you haven't thought of, I think. So this is something that I don't hope happens because I really like Zeth. But what if he's going to subtract? He's wearing white, as he always does. He essentially succeeds, and it's a positive mission. Like, it's for the greater good, where you could maybe argue he's adding, right? But he dies in the process. And it's his blood that stains his clothes in a colorful way. You know, like adding color to his clothes, right? On the white canvas, his red blood, right? I could see that being, like, as he dies, he has like the moment, I've added.
Red is his color in this chapter. It specifically says that his color splash is red.
Man, if I cracked the code there, I'm hoping I'm wrong. Which would be good. I can't deny that would be a really impactful scene.
Well,
but I like Zeth. I hope he stays around.
Oh man, and to add to this, there's this whole continuing theme of like bloodless killings with shard blades. When you kill with a shard blade, I swear Zeth has an internal dialogue on this where because it's so clean and emotionless, it like really affects Zeth of this doesn't even feel real. That this is like early Way of Kings stuff that I'm talking about, where this is way too easy. They should be bleeding, but they're not. So I wonder if Zeth getting his blood like on his tunic and that dyes his tunic red and he finally returns to his color splash. I could totally see that, Paul. Totally see that. Going back to your farmers and warriors thing, Elliot, Zeth's sister brings up the fact that there's some sea raiders that keep raiding Shinovar, and his sister says, why don't the shamans come help with the honor blades? Which would presume that they have the honor blades and they train with them. Why don't they use them? It's because they're not allowed to subtract with them, right? So they're not allowed to use them to kill. They're just going to train with them to... Zeth says that the shamans are going to continue to train until the void bringers return, and that's when they'll use them. So they're not allowed to use them against humans because that would be subtracting. So I just wanted to highlight the shamans and the honor blades are very much a public like part of culture in Shinovar. It's just very much a ritual thing. They don't use them against barbarian raiders sailing down the coast that are, you know, trying to steal their sheep or whatever.
Yeah, they even say, they're like, oh yeah, the Stone Ward Monastery is right over there. Why don't they come help us? So you're right. They're like very intentionally not using them for even defense.
Yeah. There wasn't much else in this flashback chapter. Did you guys catch anything?
Nothing else super major. Yeah.
I noticed that Zeth's sister Elid plays the flute, if that will be relevant, perhaps.
I think it very well could be. I've been curious to see. I want to see more about the dynamic of Zeth and Elid, because, you know, right now, we like modern day, our story that's live happening, We see a Zeth that's very rigid and absolutely uncaring for others. You know, he has his sense of duty and servitude, but not an actual care for those around him. And I really want a glimpse at a caring, emotional Zeth. I'm wondering if we will see that through Elid. We also, another elephant in the room, which we haven't necessarily talked about, but doesn't this chapter open with Zeth's son, Naturo, not son's son, Valano, right?
Yes.
I anticipate we should see, I'm guessing we'll see what happens with his father that has made him shift to not identifying like as under his father, but instead under his grandfather, right?
He mentions it briefly, I think, in Oathbringer when he's training with Nail. The reason he shifted to Zeth, son Valano, is because he didn't want to slander his father's name with his own actions. So I don't know what his grandpa did to deserve it, but he doesn't want to slander, like, he values his father very highly. So current day Zeth isn't going to slander his father's name because he honors his father. And apparently just disrespects his grandfather. I don't know. But yeah, that's why.
Okay. Okay. That's I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's been a minute since I've read that part of Oathbringer and I did not remember that. So that's actually really helpful context. So I'm not necessarily looking for drama between Zeth and his father. It sounds like he respects him and things.
Well,
and at the end of Rhythm of War, he gets up in Ashar's face, I think, he gets up in Taravangian's face, and Taravangian says, "Your father's dead," and Zeth gets all offended by it. And then I think, no, it is with Ashar as well,
because Ashar has the blade that his father is supposed to be wielding.
Yes, Ashar has the bondsmith, his own bondsmith blade, and Zeth freaks out and says, "Yo, my dad's supposed to have that," and because he really cares about his dad a lot. And then he goes to Taravangian, and Taravangian says, "No, your father's dead." So Zeth really cares for his father. There isn't, as far as we know, there's no breakdown in that relationship. It's just Zeth being Zeth and not wanting to associate with his father anymore. So
I think you're onto it though, Paul, and that there's a lot of things that have got to happen between flashback Zeth and modern day Zeth. So there's a lot of things we can look for. Relationships with his family is one. Has he become truthless is another. There's another bomb drop that he mentions somewhere along the way where he goes like, "Oh yeah, I've trained with all the Honor Blades." Yada, 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 and moving on. I remember pausing at that, like, "You've done what?" So we've got that somewhere along the line here. There's a lot coming between idyllic dances around the stone Zeth and stone cold killer Zeth.
In a less, this probably isn't the right connection, but in a less jovial, lighthearted sense, it almost feels like an Aang from Avatar, like The Last Airbender type of situation of like trained with all the elements, like just this talented kid, but Zeth is way more intense. Aang is very lighthearted and fun. So,
I mean, Zeth might be a little bit less intense at 11 than he is at 34 or whatever he is in current day Stormlight.
Absolutely. He definitely shows like a fondness for the world as a child, like a fondness for things, a joy. He loves to dance. Like I think having it be a dance is also like really good and pretty telling of like, that's a very innocent, you know, desire or a hobby. If I don't know, for them, it's not like a hobby, you know, but, act or talent or whatever it is, a dance is just such like a like an innocent choice that Brandon Sanderson made here, like kind of the ritualistic aspect and the professional aspect. I don't know, it's interesting. All in all, Yeah, you're right, Elliot. There's a lot that needs to happen. One, in providing us answers for things going on now and questions we have about Shinovar and an unmade that is there. And then answers on Zeth's character. If those get overlooked, I will be so upset. I don't think they will. I think Brandon has a good plan for Zeth's character in this book. But if it does get overlooked, I will actually be heartbroken. Not to be dramatic.
Not to be dramatic. Anything else in this episode, gentlemen?
Nothing else from me other than I think I wrote down that the city in Shinovar that flashback Zeth is nearest is called Clearmount. I don't know if that'll be relevant later, but I've noted that down. Clearmount might be relevant later. Other than that, that covers everything I got out of these chapters.
The establishment of the Unmade in Shinovar, according to present day Zeth, starts with a rock. And the end of the flashback chapter ends with presumably the rock. So we can read more next week and find out. For those of you reading along, I don't have a chapter split for you. I apologize. I will post it in the community Discord. So if you're looking for it, go find it there. But from this point forward, Tim is in charge of our chapter splits. So let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Let's do it.
Toodles.